Well, hello and welcome to Push to Be More with me, your host, Matt Edmondson. And we're about to dive into another deep exploration of what fuels the journey of life. And joining me today, I have my good friend, an exciting guest, Stephen Frey from Quantum Branding Agency. We are going to laugh a lot, I have no doubt, but we're going to be diving into his unique life experiences, the hurdles he's had to push through, and the ways he recharges his spirit, his batteries, and what growth looks like. The usual formula. We're going to get into the whole thing. Now, don't forget, you can find the detailed show notes and a complete transcript of our conversation, oh yes, at pushtobemore.com. Love how the music's timing in here. And whilst you're there, if you haven't done so already, make sure you sign up to the newsletter. And each week we'll zip all of the show's insights, links, and goodies direct to your inbox, totally for free, which is totally cool. Now, this episode is powered by Orion Media, the magic behind the scenes that lets entrepreneurs and business leaders like you and me amplify our voices by hosting your own podcast. But why would you want to start your own podcast, you might be thinking? Well, let me tell you, my own podcasting journey has been nothing short of transformational. It's not just about marketing for marketing's sake, but it's about community. It's about connection. It's about meaningful conversation. And it's given me a platform to celebrate my customers, my team, my suppliers, and created a ripple of impact far beyond what I could have imagined. But I get it. The technical stuff can feel daunting. Setup, distribution, getting the tech right, understanding the strategy seems like a lot, right? And honestly, don't get me started on production. No one wants to do that, including yours truly. And that's where Orion Media steps in. They're the backstage crew that makes sure your show goes on flawlessly. You get to do what you love, which is having meaningful conversations, engaging with incredible people, and Orion Media takes care of all the nitty-gritty details. So if you've been wondering whether podcasting is the missing puzzle piece in your growth strategy, have a chat with Orion Media. Check them out at orionmedia.com. That's AURIONmedia.com. So that's the show sponsor. Let's talk about the guest. Stephen is the founder and chief brand scientist at Quantum Branding. He helps brands become authentic and a memorable category leader through the power of, check it out, brand science, the core of what fuels successful brands' growth, sales, and marketing. He's passionate about helping purpose-driven brands get to the next level, disrupt their market, and leverage the power of brand science to become an industry authority. Stephen, welcome to Push to Be More, man. How are we doing today?
I'm good, and thank you so much. That is probably one of the thickest sentences I've ever written. It's like tapioca pudding and grammar all put together.
It is thick. It's fascinating, isn't it, when you read people's bios, and I'm reading it and going, I'm having this internal dilemma. Is it leverage or leverage? Because in the States, you say it one way, and in the UK, we say it the other, but I've got so confused recently. I just don't know whether I'm coming or going with words like that.
So a little rule of thumb that if you pronounce it, I forget the term, it's a linguistic term. Even if you say it incorrectly and people can still tell what it is, just keep moving. like ask, if some people say axe.
Oh yeah.
Like, oh, I'd love to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Like I still can understand what you're saying. Move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing with misspelling. Like don't like we make such a big hullabaloo about, that sounds like a British word, hullabaloo.
Maybe it is. I don't know.
But yeah, so just keep moving.
That's always the plan. That's all you do, won't you, on your podcast? Just keep going. Just keep going. Just keep moving. Keep the conversation flowing, and it's a good way to do it. So listen, let's start with the all popular podcast question. Whilst you get blinded by sunlight there, let's start with the all popular podcast question. If you had a podcast of your own. Right? Because Orion Media sponsored the show, the podcast agency. If you had your own podcast and you could have any guest on the show, past or present, that's had a big influence on your life, who would you have on as a guest? Who would you have a chat with and why?
So I just came up with this now. I think I would have a podcast and I'd have to get help with production help and all that backstage stuff from Orion Media. That's obviously. It's going to be called probably... yours is called Push to Do More. Mine would be called pull to be less.
pull to be less. Love it.
Pull to do less. Pull. I don't know. We're still workshopping that one. So I would actually, believe it or not, I would actually have Nikola Tesla on.
Okay. Why?
If I could. So I'm just fascinated by brilliant people, and I'm fascinated by neurodiverse people who were often misunderstood. I mean, even with Einstein, and many of the folks that we see that are considered geniuses, they often exhibit a lot of these neurodiverse traits or neurodiversity. And for anybody listening not familiar with that term, it's kind of an all-encompassing starburst of different ways that people are wired, whether it's ADHD, ADD, dyslexia, autism. There's a variety of, whether it's social, occupational, informational, physical, just there's different ways that we're wired, that most people are wired typically. So one term is neurotypical. So people who are wired differently is neurodiverse. And so, like Einstein was often childish and stuck out his tongue. That's a very neurodiverse trait, juvenile, that sense of wonder. And so Tesla, even though I'm mentioning Einstein here, Tesla is just one of those people, like, I don't feel like he got enough notability. Little vocab help. Don't say notoriety. That's actually bad. You want notability.
Okay. Top tip.
Don't say notoriety. I don't think Tesla got the attention he deserved. And now he has his name put on an electric vehicle. I don't know that he would have been okay with that. But is what it is. So there's some things there that I would have loved to ask. Like, tell me about, your hypotheses. How did you, what motivated you? And honestly, I think everyone has, if they're a genius or a neurodiverse person who's, we all have our hyperfixations and different things that we love to dive into. And even everyone does things that we love. And for some reason, he was in love with kind of electricity and currents and waves and transmission and these ideas of signals. And I just would have loved to just hear and absorb and discover and learn what his mind was like. So that would be my first signature keynote guest,
Mr. on, Tesla.
Pull to do less.
pull to be less. Your first guest. No, fair play. I think blinding show that.
No, it's do less, because yours is pushed to be more.
Okay.
Mine is all the opposites. It's all the opposite.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Pull to do less.
Less. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yes. Yeah. So.
That's good. The yin to my yang, for want of a better expression.
Here all day, folks.
Yeah, here all day. Don't forget to tip your waiter. And now, it's good. I love our conversations. They just go everywhere. So you said neurodiverse, right? You want to talk to him because he was a neurodiverse chap. Why do you want
to speak? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah. But why, you brought that up about Einstein, a lot of the geniuses. I've just watched the movie a few months ago, the Oppenheimer movie. Obviously, something with that chap. Amazing what went on, but obviously it's slightly neurodiverse. Why, what intrigues you about neurodiversity?
So for me, that's actually part of my journey, is discovering that I am in fact, neurodiverse. It's something kind of like how, and I don't want to polarize the conversation too much, but the more we understand how people are born and how they are wired, we've come to discover that there are more expressions of humanity than we initially think. So just like with gender binary, it's male or female, like that's actually not the case. And there's diversity in the expression of our genetics and gender identity and sexual orientation, and there's other ways that's also influences is in our genetic expression and how we're wired with our capabilities and our senses and how our bodies are wired. And so those have been some of my discoveries, is that I'm neurodiverse. And it's been part of my journey that now looking back, I see like, my favorite color is orange. And it's like, there's an orange thread, like there's an orange thread throughout my life where I see consistency and I see like, that actually is a more concrete, or that gives me more understanding or perspective now looking back with hindsight as a mature adult on childhood experiences, social interactions, from things to employment, to projects, to, you know, life experiences in general, having more understanding with learning about that diagnosis later on in life.
Wow. So when did you find out? I mean, I guess you've always known, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Have you always known that you've had neurodiversity, or was it something that needed to be defined so that then gave you understanding of the past, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I don't. That's kind of a hard question to answer, because there's part of us wants to feel special. Mm-hmm. So part of us, like, we want to be affirmed, or we want to affirm children that they are unique and they're special. And that's not what this is. This isn't like this is actually a way that I identify that I'm normal, that I'm just like a whole lot of other people. And there's actually a book out there. I can't recall the authors. I believe they're Japanese, but it's The Courage to Be Disliked and The Courage to Be Happy. Those are both two great books on Alfred Adler, who was an opposite contemporary of Freud. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he said is that one of the ways we find human connectedness is by identifying that we are the same as other people. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is learning there are some unique things that our preferences, our difficulties, are the way I'm wired, things I enjoy. There's actually a whole bunch of other people who do that as well. Yeah. One of the kind of the tips that started this movement of me kind of taking a second look at things. I remember being in like second or third grade and complaining, going to the nurse because I had a headache. And I would tell the nurse that I can hear the fluorescent bulbs vibrating, and it would give me such a headache. And sometimes the teacher would turn them off, but typically she would leave them on. And depends. And it was typically when there was a bulb getting ready to burn out when it flickered the most. But I could hear these, like the vibrations of things, and would be told that I'm making that up. Now, fast forward, I can go into a room and I can be like, that's an old filament bulb. I can hear it and feel it vibrating. And what's interesting is you and I may be talking, and I may be having a hard time hearing you talk, if we're in a coffee shop or at a restaurant or a pub, and I can hear the dishwasher, I can hear the cash register, I can hear the music, and I know the lyrics going on, and I can hear the train going by. And so I discovered that I have a thing called SPD, sensory processing disorder, where it's like that thing where, you know, mom says, you know, turn down the radio so I can see. That's, you know, when you're driving the car, some of us, as we get older, you know, we need to concentrate more, but that's the best example I can give. And so discovering that I had SPD led me to, having a service dog and really explained, like, when I go out, I basically am picking up, imagine multiple radios going at once. I'm picking up all the other stations and I'm unable to tune into my own.
Wow.
So how do I manage that? So learning how to manage that, and, you know, from adjusting my environments to, you know, even having music on in the background that has no lyrics. There's a joke that, you know, there's emotional support TV and emotional support radio, and everything can be emotional support, like creating a sensory environment for myself that actually helps me flourish. Even wearing these earbuds, I can wear them in public with my iPhone. I'm not sure if Android does this, but I can have background noises, and I turn on the ocean very low, and then noise canceling. So I can go out and there's like a you know, a very calming noise that help keep my kind of my regulatory system, just kind of my parasympathetic nervous system. I can stay at a calmer state, because what actually has been happening is my whole life I've been in alert mode. I've been in alert mode so much it's affected my health, it's affected my emotions, it's affected my, you know, my GI system and my intestines and my ability to digest, because I can't digest if I'm not resting, you know, and having, you know, autoimmune responses, because why? My body is stuck in trauma mode. And so that's one of the things that I've discovered was SPD at first. And then that led me to slowly discover more truths and kind of put the pieces together that helps explain, like, oh, there's a whole bunch of other people who know exactly what this is like, and I'm not alone. And there's tools and resources out there for us and support from each other in dealing with some of the realities that are unique to me and others who are also neurodiverse.
Wow. I'm listening to you talk and going, goodness me, there's a, how do you, because I don't have what you, I don't have that going on. I don't have that constant noise. If I'm sat down with somebody, I can pretty much, my wife tells me I've got selective hearing, you know, just tune into the bits that I want to tune into. And so I'm listening to you talk. That could not have been easy to grow up with. You know, as a kid, I'm thinking back to when I was a kid, and I appreciate this is going to be slightly longer ago, Stephen, because I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and they did not have phrases like neurodiverse in the 70s and 80s, you know, they just didn't exist. So what was it like growing up with all of that?
Sure. you know, I it's weird is until a fish trying to climb a tree is told that they're a fish, they don't know. So as far as I knew, I thought I was just like everybody else. I thought that everyone else experienced things the way I did. It's interesting. I work in advertising and in marketing and in an intersection of neuroplasticity and memories and branding. And so what's funny is I probably was a marketer's dream as a child because I remembered all these songs. But what's funny is now I'm an adult and I remember all these cartoons and these songs and these commercials. And so now I'm an advertiser's nightmare. So it's because I work in their industry and I'm like researching all this stuff. You know, I think growing up, I think there was some challenges for me that it was harder for me to understand some of, I think, the social norms of making friends. This is probably where a lot of folks, including myself, there's a term we call, and I've heard before in circles, about cosmic aloneness. Like nobody gets you, like nobody really sees you or gets you. And so, you know, we probably can all think of the child who loves to tell stories and wants to be heard. And it's kind of like that, like, you may see and experience beauty in certain ways. And as a child that you saw, and so for me, you know, I thought, doesn't everybody, you know, memorize, I have a book on my shelf, I'm looking at it. Doesn't everybody memorize the book, You and Your Aquarium? And all the salt water and fresh fishes and facts about them. Doesn't everyone do that? Doesn't everyone take out every book on dinosaurs possible? And I would, you know, if you went back and looked like at the library card, this is how old I am. I'm in the
with
system.
The stamp on it.
With a stamp on it from the librarian, or we used to call it the library. I would take out these books on dinosaurs and I'd be taking out the same book over and over and the same books. And they were all like green through purple gem tones, like this whole series. I don't know why they weren't pink or yellow or orange. They were all green, blue, and purple. All these on the different, you know, on the different dinosaurs. Doesn't everyone ask about, you know, your favorite dinosaur? Like, and so there's some of the beauty of my childhood was that I latched on to information and things that words and information, because that's the way that I describe the very, very big, big world that's inside me. And it's, and if anybody who is familiar with, you know, kind of the more esoteric things like astrology and energy, and they would say like, yes, there is an energy world inside us and with chakras and things. And what's interesting is if you look at folks who are neurodiverse, you know, there's science there to say that like, you know, neurotypical people may be this wavelength and neurodiverse people are this wavelength. There's differences in, you know, the frequencies of our brain waves or areas of our brain, and there's more activity, even going to sleep at night it's harder to sleep. I've always had a hard time going to sleep unless you take Lunesta and then you like go batshit crazy and you see like a fluttering hallucinate, seeing a little, you know, if you see the green butterfly. I don't even think they make Lunesta anymore for that reason, because too many people were hallucinating. But, you know, like even brain activity just at night sleeping is higher. Mm-hmm. So there's positives and there's negatives. You know, I was obsessed with Legos. I collected the whole Ice Planet set. It was my favorite colors. It was like neon orange with blue, black, and white. Mm-hmm. And I saved all the boxes. Like, I saved all the boxes.
Wow.
And all the directions. And I had them all separate. Mm-hmm. And I'd like everything to be order. And so the internal world and the relationship with information and objects is really the... whereas others may have, you know, relationships with people,
yeah,
and that be very natural. That's natural for me and many others who are neurodiverse or autistic. There's a more easier relationship with things, ideas, information, and that's concrete. And so it's easier to live in that concreteness. And then many times the challenges come with these made up social norms. I think I was 21, 20 or 21. I was a senior in undergrad and my roommate had said a joke and I was incredibly offended. And I was like upset. I'm washing the dishes and I'm slamming things a little bit. And he's like walking by and he stops. He's like, "You mad, bro?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Are you mad at that joke I made earlier?" I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Joke, Steven, joke, it's sarcasm. It was and like it dawned on me, like, wait a second. Was I really, really ridiculed as bad as I thought as a child? Or was everybody like mostly sarcastic? And maybe I was made fun of like 20% or 10%, you know, like bell curve. Everyone's teased a little bit and the most of it was sarcasm. And so like even things like sarcasm and social norms and social cues have been a challenge. Looking back, I'm like, oh, they were probably joking. Like, and so there is some relief. There is some relief that comes from like, oh, I wasn't crazy. I did hear the light bulbs.
Yeah.
And then, okay, I'm not being too dramatic. I actually am having a sensory overload right now. And, oh, I can tease with Matt because I'm believing 98% of the time he's sarcastic. So then it's easy.
It's probably about right. Yeah.
Now, I'm very good on detecting dad anger, like the holy dad anger. This conversation starts with, you came home last night and it ends with, you're grounded. Fill me in the middle. You know, like
my dad conversations with my kids. Anger usually. Yeah, they can. With my kids, when they were those conversations and I wanted them to understand things were not going well, I would say to them, "You and I are going to have a conversation. And you will not enjoy it." And that was my cue.
And that's funny because I say that non-verbally most of the time I'm talking. And I'm like, "You and I are going to have a conversation about saltwater fish and you're probably not going to enjoy it." No, I'm just kidding. I assume everyone's going to enjoy it, actually.
Well, why not? Why not?
So would you like to hear about Rosie Barbs and Serpe Tetras? I mean, Come thou fount of every blessing here.
Yeah, maybe on a different podcast. But yeah.
I should hit them up and see if there's a You and Your Aquarium podcast. We'll go on.
You totally should, because yeah, absolutely. So what actually this is like, I was intrigued by a statement you said that this has been both good and bad, that this has been both a blessing and a curse, right? That actually, and that was one of the things, I don't know if you ever read the book David and Goliath by Malcolm Gladwell. Mm-hmm. In effect, he was talking about people with dyslexia, amongst other things in the book, wasn't he? And how actually that could be their superpower. And it doesn't have to define them in a way that disadvantages them permanently and all the time. Have you found that with the SPD, that it's your kryptonite and it's your superpower?
Yeah, here's an interesting take on it. So what's interesting is I look at the work that I do, and if I stand back and say, like, okay, so before I knew all this, 2004, I got one of my first jobs at an agency, and mm-hmm. you know, I'm reading the book Designing Brand Identity by Alina Wheeler, and I'm reading it, and I'm just intrigued and I'm fascinated. But I'm left with this question, why? Like, okay, yes, this is the process of how you do branding, but Alina, come on, help me out. Why? Why? How does it work? Like, why? Mm. So fast forward, I start my own agency in 2009, and my whole kind of, I say my whole career, but yeah, the whole trajectory of what I've done has been focused on understanding how does truly effective branding work and why. Mm. And then I realize, holy cow, I was hyper fixated. I was like, you know, and people with ADHD and ADD, they can be hyper fixated. You know, many neurodiverse people can be.
Yeah.
We all can be, but it's predominantly a trait where we just kind of put our heads down and we research it to the nth degree. And I look back and I say, so professionally, I take a look at how to create a brand's sensory experience.
Yeah.
Word, shape, color, sound, music, story. And the one area of my life that I'm wired differently is in the area of sensory experiences. Like, so yeah, absolutely. It's the superpower and also, you know, a challenge. You know, it's kind of like a tool. You can't treat everything like if the only tool you have is a hammer, you know, you can't take that to glass. You need some other tools. And for myself, you know, I honestly think for the longest time I only had a hammer. I only knew how to navigate the world with the tools that I was given, the tools that I explained. And until I could learn and find out myself that, oh wow, there's other ways to talk, like even just talking. Like here's a really great example. I had somebody give me feedback once. And you know, we're being vulnerable about things here. I had somebody say, like, Steven, when you talk, and she's like, you know, this is feedback. You can take it, you don't have to take it. You know, I want you to know that this may be true, this may be not. This is feedback. Mm-hmm. But when you talk, sometimes you fire hose me. I feel fire hosed and I don't feel like there's space. Mm. And I know that you care about me a lot. And if I told you this, you would be able to be more cognizant of how to create more space in conversation with people. Now, what's interesting is that concept of creating space and having conversation is actually a really, really neurotypical thing. Mm. I can sit down with another neurodiverse person and we can do one of several things. One, I can info dump on them and they can info dump on me and we feel love. We're like, oh, awesome. Fish, dinosaurs. Yes.
Yeah.
Or I can listen to the same, you know, we could listen to the same albums over and over and over and over and over. They could also give me a really, really big squishy, like really big bear hug and like super compress me. And that would be it. You could do that. There's several ways that like neurodiverse people, I just click and I get them. Mm-hmm. But to live in a world with everyone, I have to be more aware of how do other people experience me and not everyone has the same tools to experience me. And so, so I've had to learn how to, how do I show up? And so we have this secret, it's a secret boop button. Boop.
Boop.
You
okay.
know, so if you're ever, it's like the staples, this is, that was easy. You know, if ever I'm like talking too much, someone just can say boop. You know, and only a couple friends know this, you know.
Okay.
It's well, not
the whole
everybody.
World knows it
not
now,
everybody.
To be so fair.
I don't want to get emails from people be like, boop, Steven, boop. comments. There's like 150,000 comments in the
Yeah, and they're all just podcast. Boop. Boop, 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 boop.
But, you know, creating guardrails, and we all need guardrails in our own life of how do we stay focused? How do we stay on a path? And for me, you know, that's conversationally making sure like, oh, eye contact. I'm making sure I'm making eye contact. Oh, I'm hearing you say words back to me every so often. If I don't hear you say something every two or three sentences, I better pause and say, oh, what do you think? Even just asking people what they think. Oh, what do you think about that? That's a way that I make sure that they're connected, you know? So you're like, tell me, is it your strength? Is it your weakness? And I share. And then I'm like, yeah, these are some of the things I do. And then you say like, oh, that must be awfully hard. Like I have to listen and make sure that you and I are verbally playing ping pong with each other. As just one example, that's just one of many, many little ways that I probably, you know, I'm thinking about things a little bit more than some other people may, you know, maybe they are too. Maybe everyone's thinking about that. I know that I've had to put in a lot of work to show up in public spaces where people be like, oh, you don't look autistic. And I'm like, what does it look like? What does it look like? There's a look like, oh, I didn't know you were gay. And you're like, what does that look like? Like,
you mean you weren't wearing the t-shirt?
And you're like, oh, I didn't. You're like, it's like saying like, oh, you don't look Irish. Sometimes those labels are helpful.
Mm.
So for me to say like, oh yeah, I'm on the autism spectrum and those things, because imagine if you're a horse and you think there's something wrong with you, but then come to find out you're just a zebra. Mm. In fact, there's a whole lot of other zebras, but you've been basing like, you know, who you are based on, you know, like, painted or Arabian horses, when really just you're a silly zebra.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of other zebras, and I'm probably like the fun stripe zebra, you know, the multicolored one. But you know what I mean? Like there's, but like yeah, once, so it's not about the labels. It's about understanding like who's your tribe, and there's other people just like you, so that you can realize not that you're special, but that you're like other people and other people are like you. And it makes the burden of that. There's some funny things too. One is called Beverage Goblin, and I didn't realize
beverage
this.
Goblin.
So many of our, yes, Beverage Goblin. So, you know, you're a Beverage Goblin. If you have three drinks on your desk, one for caffeine, one for hydration, and one for fun. And I literally, okay. There is typically that's a cup me. Of coffee. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cup of coffee, a water, and a Coke Zero on my desk at any given moment.
So the Coke Zero is for fun.
Yes, that's the fun drink. And and so there's memes about this. There's memes about this. And you can join neurodiverse Facebook groups. And every so often, it's like a recurring meme.
Wow.
And I'll send a picture of, you know, my desk or whatever. And there'll be, you know, my water bottle and my Starbucks and my soda or whatever. But that's just, so there's a unique factor, and there's a fun factor, and there's things there as well. So don't hear me that, you know, this is a negative diagnosis or this is a negative thing. And in fact, I actually had a mother come to me that I had met in a program that I was in with other small agency owners. And she said that she had two boys, and one of them was on the spectrum, and how much hope it gave her to see me out promoting my own business and being in this group. And, you know, and she's like, how much love I see for Onyx, your husky, and that he has for you, and how you work together, like, just gives me so much hope for my son. And as he was entering high school, and she and I have remained friends. So there's a lot of positive things that come out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well.
One of the things that I'm truly inspired as you talk, Stephen, is you make statements like, there was a lot of work for me to go out in public and do dot, 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 right? Like, you've had to work hard at understanding people. You've created mechanisms like asking them, so what do you think about that? Which is something that I've noticed you do. And you've created this system that enables you to function with different types of people, right? So whether neurodiverse, neurotypical, or whichever sort of people. And I think that's awesome, because what you've done is you've looked at that and gone, this is my worldview. This is how I view the world, how I operate. This person over here is not better than me, is not worse than me, but they are different. And they think this way. So I need to create some kind of mechanism to reach with that people that have this worldview over here. And I think one of the things that I would probably say a lot of neurotypical people don't do is they don't do it the other way around. They just kind of go, okay, well, there's something, I don't know if they'd verbalize the statement, there's something wrong with you, but probably that's how they think. And that I don't understand you, therefore, you're in a minority over here, so I'm going to stick with my clique over here.
Sure.
I think actually that's something that I think if people just actually did, man, that would build a lot of bridges, you know, and a lot of connection with people.
And this concept of neurodiversity, it's a newer term, and I'm trying to, its names are failing me, but there was a specific person who came up with this just within the past 20 years or so. And it's a framework to describe the differences in way people's brains work. And it's removing the idea that there's a correct way.
Mm.
And so when you think of it as like a bell curve, like we say most of the time, it's like most of the time leaves are green.
Mm.
Well, some of the time they're brown, red, yellow, or orange when they're falling off in autumn or fall, mm. if you have that season. And other times they may be variegated if there's a genetic variation. And so like to say that all like, you know, like we don't go outside and look at trees and we're like, that tree's not, you know, perfectly straight. It's, you know, mm-hmm. it may be cattywampus. And yes, we're not getting into pruning and other things, but we're saying like, we mm-hmm. don't look out at trees and compare them and say one is better than the other one, or mm-hmm. one is mm-hmm. growing. Or, you know, we look at a fat, chubby, cute cat. And we say, oh, that's a cute, chubby cat. Or there's a hairless cat with no teeth. And we're like, oh, look at that silly cat. You know, so to say that there's one typical way people are is trying to think, is not constructive.
Yeah,
it's actually to say that there's one way, and for us to think that way, and so what this does is it gives, in the same thing with being differentially enabled, you know, we used to say disabled. Well, it's not that they're disabled, it's just they're differently enabled. You know, whether that's mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, you know, like if I'm, you know, either being born or from an accident, you know, my appendages in my body are changed or are different than yours. It just means I'm equipped with this one that I do have.
Mm.
And it's like, stop focusing on what we don't have. Show us what we do have. And so neurodiversity is a framework for understanding the differences in the way people's brains work and the idea that there is no correct one. And you kind of hit it on the head. I think we actually, neurotypical and the majority of folks, try to do this when in the business sector, with DISC and personality assessments and, you know, which Disney princess are you, or, you know, all these other things. Like we have an idea that we're similar, but we're different. Mm. We're similar and distinct. Like we're onto it, but we haven't really followed the crumb trail. I think parents are really good at this with their own kids. They're like, oh, this kid I can punish.
Mm.
I have to punish by taking away toys, because I could spank them all day long and it wouldn't work. So I have to take away toys. But this one, I can just look at them and they will feel bad and run off and cry.
Yeah.
Like we know, like if you have children, you know how your children are wired. Mm-hmm. And so you know how to nurture them in that same way. And if we looked at people all around us in that same way, that we could nurture them.
Mm.
And so I think if we had that awareness walking in, Onyx has a little patch on his vest he wears. It says not all disabilities are visible.
Mm.
You know, when I'm at the airport, people want to pet him and he's got patches all over. You know, I even wear a hat that says, don't pet me, I'm working. Like we all have the patches. And what's interesting is there's a term called ableism. Ableism mm-hmm. is where people they make a judgment. You know, my mother has rheumatoid arthritis. She's had it since I was 3. She had it when she was 26. And so she went, she will not use the handicap spot if she doesn't need it. But there's days where she can barely walk or even take a tissue out of a box. Mm. And yet there's the judgments. Oh, you don't look disabled. You don't look different. Yeah. And so there's so many barriers and challenges when people use kind of object permanence or object reference. Mm-hmm. They reference outside and what they can see, instead of maybe taking notes that there's differences uniquely and internally that are there, that if we were more compassionate and empathetic to, we could love people and interact with people a lot better.
So powerful, so true. And I realized a long time ago, I think I'm still realizing the lesson on a lot of ways. My default is to think that I'm normal. And my default is to think, whatever normal looks like, but my default is to think that I'm normal and therefore everybody is like me. And actually, I think the older I get, the more I realize I'm not normal, whatever normal looks like. And two, people are definitely not all like me, which is probably a good thing for the human race, you know.
That's like driving during rush hour traffic. Everyone thinks the world revolves around their car.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They want to get home on time. You're like, why are you all doing this to me?
It's funny, isn't it?
Everyone's driving in their car too. They are just like you. They're all in different like cars, you. But they're driving. They want to go too.
I read a great quote. Well, I heard a great quote, and I've actually put it in a talk that I've done. But here's the quote, right? To quote Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi, because great source of truth. you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view. And I think it's a really fascinating statement. But yeah. Listen, bud.
Do you know what movie that was in?
I'm going to say...
Return of the Jedi.
No, it was not. I think it was like episode 1. No, it would have been episode 2, I think, when Anakin was a little bit older.
Okay. For listeners, go put it in the comments. Who said that? When did they say it? Was it Return of the Jedi? Is Stephen right?
Yeah, is Matt right? Or are they both wrong? Yeah.
Right. Do you want to be right? Chime in with your comments.
Be right. Right, let's do the, because I feel like we're going to run out of time, because I just love chatting
question
with you.
Question box time.
Dun, dun. And I knew you'd love my branding. So I'm going to flip through the cards. You're going to tell me when to stop. Where we stop, that's the question I'm going to ask.
Now.
Okay. Describe one piece of art that you really like and why.
I'm gonna pick this one. So while I love Monet and the mm-hmm. impressionistic movement, we're gonna say this cat.
Okay. There we go. We can see it now. That's it. So why that?
So I love so this is a print because I'm cannot afford the actual artist. But I love cats and I rescue cats, and that kind of looks like there's a picture of my cat, and it looks like the album cover of Dashboard Confessional, where he's like walking on the beach and his head is down and he has that same pose.
Yeah.
And his name was Scooter Fitzgerald Vanderbilt III. He was a little orange tabby buff, and he passed away from liver failure, kidney failure, about 10 years ago. And that picture, it looked exactly like the picture of him. And so that's just a sentimental piece of art that I found. I love all different kinds of art. Mm. I was on a podcast the other week and they're like, oh, you surf? And I'm like, no, just mid-century modern splashes of color that matches my bungalow. And they're like, oh, that's amazing. Because I was going to talk about surfing today. And I was like, sorry.
Sorry to
be like a surf.
I think I asked you the first time I saw you, are they surfboards behind you? And you went, no. You must get asked that question a lot.
Twice at least.
What?
Today.
Today, yeah. It's interesting with that.
Every
isn't
time
it?
I'm on, every time.
Yeah.
Every yeah. time on the Pull to Do Less podcast.
The Pull to Do Less podcast.
The answer is always no, because I do less. No,
I could do it. If I could figure out a way, but to play the theme music backwards, then I would have you theme music for your podcast as well. yeah, yeah, absolutely. Listen, man, I'm aware of time. If people want to reach out to you, if they want to connect with you, find out more about what you're doing at Quantum Branding, just have a chat with you because they, you know, want to know more about neurodiversity or want to look at your art a bit more.
Absolutely.
What's the best way to
Absolutely.
Do that?
Absolutely. Yeah, so we're going to give you a link in the show notes. That's going to be my link tree. That's the easiest one. You can click on the link tree and you can obviously Google Quantum Branding and find out more about what I do there. You can also watch my award-winning speech on brand science. You can also shoot me an email on there. So that's the link. It's link.tree/Stephen Fry with an AE. Linktree Stephen Fry. So, and there you can also find out about the work I do at Quantum, as well as the Brandpreneur Program, which helps purpose-driven brand leaders be equipped with the power of brand science to get their own actionable plan in a revolutionary 10-week program and 4-day workshop. So those are the main things. You can check out the Linktree, you can check out Brandpreneur, and you can check out Quantum Branding. Those are the main ways. I'm on LinkedIn too, if you want to like, hey, be my friend. LinkedIn is kind of like the businessy Facebook.
It is. Yeah. It's always been like that, isn't it?
It's kind of business Facebook.
We're acquaintances.
And then I get a standard message. Please don't send me a message that says, I would love to connect. Like, be like, hey, I have a cat too. Or like, you did horrible.
I want to be a guest on
You did horrible on
this.
Matt's podcast. Or I want to be a guest on your new,
Push to Do List. Pull to Do List
podcast. yeah, so just if you want to join me on, add me on LinkedIn. Just don't make it spammy.
Please don't make it spammy. No, definitely reach out to Stephen, especially if you need help with branding. He's the man, dude. Yeah, you definitely want to check out what they're doing at Quantum Branding. There's some really great stuff. So we will, of course, link to Stephen's Linktree in the show notes, like he said, as well as his LinkedIn where you can't spam him. But you can request to be a guest on Pull to Do Less, the new podcast.
Y'all, it's fake. It's fake. If you don't get it, it's a... Oh, this is another thing I love being neurodiverse. Explanatory dad humor. If you weren't aware that that
it
is my shtick.
Sarcastic.
Explanatory dad humor is my MO. Where I make a joke and then make a dad joke and then explain it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what? It got so bad in our house, but I had to put up a sign in the kitchen saying dad jokes told here. So when I'd make a dad joke or a dad statement, I'd end up pointing to the sign, just going, I just to be totally, you know, it is part of the system here. So my wife would just roll her eyes at me, probably quite rightly so, to be fair. But yes, listen, man, love talking to you. Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me. Thank you, audience. Thank you folks for tuning in. What is the singular version of audience?
Audience.
There's audience and audience listener. Thank you,
ODI,
each listener.
Maybe ODI.
Thank you, each listener. For, you know, if you're listening today and you've enjoyed this, thanks for joining us. It's been a pleasure. If you weren't listening, there would be no one to talk to. And so I appreciate that. So thanks for listening. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's been great. Love it. Well, there we go. Another wrapped up conversation with a fantastic chap. Massive round of applause. In fact, I can do this. Massive round of applause. There we go. Yeah. Stephen, for joining us today. Huge thanks also to today's champion sponsor, Orion Media. For all you change makers out there contemplating podcasting as your new vehicle of expression, definitely connect with them at orionmedia.com. gmail.com. Now, remember, keep pushing to be more. Don't forget to follow the podcast wherever you get your podcast from, because we've got some more great conversations lined up, and I don't want you to miss any of them. And in case no one has told you yet today, let me be the first. You are awesome. Yes, you are. Created awesome. It's just a burden you have to bear. Stephen's got to bear it. I've got to bear it. You've got to bear it as well. Now, push to be more is... I've been waiting for the bell all the podcasting. You just made to the end. Brilliant. Push to Be More is brought to life by Aurea Media. For transcripts and show notes, go to the website pushtobemore.com. A huge kudos to the team that makes this show possible, Salaf Bainon and Tanya Hutzlak. And a shout out to Josh Edmondson for our incredible theme music. So that's it from me. That's it from Stephen. Thank you so much for joining us. Have an awesome week. I'll catch you on the flip side. Until then, keep pushing. Bye for now.